This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Eita, Happy New Year. Compliments of the new season. We're saying it now because we couldn't say it last week or the week before. Welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politrix. I am DJ Fresh. His name is Botsang Modimoame Moilwa. And we're here for Politrix this week.
Yes, good morning, Fresh, and the followers and the viewers. Yeah, once more, Happy New Year.
Oh, grand.
Grand,
welcome back.
I relaxed, yeah. I should welcome you back. You've been all over and waking.
I didn't think I'd say I missed you, but I missed you.
It's normal. When people love each other,
yes, sir.
You do miss each other.
No, I missed you. I missed your mind. I missed your sometimes not having a stop.
But you know, I didn't miss the show. Honestly, I didn't miss.
No, because it was a welcome break.
I was also, you know, focusing on quite a number of shows and development.
Yes,
and
sir.
I honestly took a break, especially from around the 20th of December. I shut off from politics.
Weren't you on Russian TV just the other day?
The Turkish, yeah.
Was it the Turkish one?
It was this week. It was on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But I started this week. What I'm saying is I did a shutdown of about 2 to 3 weeks.
Sure.
It was the TRT, the Turkish television, based in London. I once, twice a month do programs for them.
So what were you discussing on TRT?
The situation in Mozambique, you know, despite the inauguration, but the whole situation in Mozambique. Remember before even the elections, there was a situation of a war, you know, erupting in the northern province, Cabo Delgado and all that. So we're covering Mozambique with some expert who wrote a book about RENAMO. He's based in London.
Yes, sir.
The historical RENAMO transforming from, you know, a guerrilla movement to a political party in the opposition. Then an activist from Mozambique with human rights talking about the current situation and what happened. So we're discussing all that.
Yes. Before we jump into the week, where is the book? You've been talking about a book for a year and a half.
But remember, the book, my upcoming book,
yes,
I have a reason why I'm holding it back for publication. It's ready. It's baked.
Sure.
It's ready for actually next week's episode. I'll come with a dummy of it to show how it looks like, because the guy who did, what do you call it, the guy who did the cover for me and the design and cover and all that, I got him through this show.
Okay.
I said it on the show, and
yes, sir,
there were submissions, and this guy won. I still have to give him his award. But the book is ready. I will just have to wait for my labor matter to pass, which is, you know, around the corner. Then it will be on the shelves.
So what's on or in the new book that is not in the previous books?
It's the continuation of, it's more like the continuation of the biography.
Okay.
But in real life, then adult life, because people were like, how do you write a biography at 45?
Exactly.
But let me tell you, between age 45 and today,
yeah,
another life of Botsang happened.
Mm.
And it's about my life in the public service, actually.
Okay.
Specifically in the public service.
Mm.
The cases that I faced, the challenges, and even some great things that has happened.
Mm.
So actually the target market is a book to a public administrator.
Anyone? I was going to say, if I'm a public administrator, what would you say is one of the lessons or gems I'm going to pick up from this book?
It's how public administrators should be very principled and stick to the law. They must not be swayed and influenced by political appointees or political office bearers.
Or political affiliations.
Affiliations, even. Yes. You know, be an administrator, or whether you are in finance or admin or HR of government, and stick to the book and stick to the rules. Because time and again, it happens that public administrators get into trouble, whether they are CFOs or CEOs, they get into trouble due to the pressures and the conduct of political appointees.
Oh, yes.
And they tend to break the law. And that got me too much into trouble for refusing to break the law. But you know what? It has saved me from being aligned to corruption and maladministration and face, you know, prosecution and charges for failing to execute my duties. So the target is, you know, my fellow colleagues in the public service. I mean, I was telling somebody last week who was doing the book review that in the 10 years in my current previous job, in the 10 years I was in, I faced disciplinary hearing 13 times.
Sure.
So it's an average of every 8 months.
And this is because you refuse to play ball.
Because of, exactly. You
but often, obviously, it will be cooked. as there's insubordination.
Insubordination and things
he's
like that.
He's not a team player.
Exactly.
But Grand, you refused to
play the ball.
Yeah.
You know, that is not the right ball to do. So the book is ready. Soon we'll have a copy on this platform.
Do you name names in the book?
Hey, a lot, bro. You cannot ever write a book about corruption and public administration and politics without putting names in there.
Mm.
But you know, I learned from the past from Dr. Mashama Eaton.
Yes,
because
sir.
At the beginning I thought writing a book and naming people you may be sued.
Mm.
No, you can't. I'm writing about my life.
Sure.
And if fresh has happened to have crossed my path, whether good or bad, I'll mention you.
Sure.
As long as I can substantiate
yeah, it's
with
your
the
lived,
truth.
It's
I'm
your
not
lived,
lying.
It's your lived experience.
Yes, it's my lived experience. Mm. So those who have crossed my path, they will be mentioned there.
Mm.
As long as you don't lie and, you know, make insinuations and
sure.
things that you cannot back up. Because it's not about them.
Mm.
It's about my experience.
Sure.
And yeah, but you cannot be in the public service and you don't mention people, especially
yeah, like,
political office bearers.
Like they say, you're entitled to your opinions about me, but not to your own facts.
Yes.
As long as it's factual.
As long as it's factual.
Yeah. No, that's dope. Looking forward to it.
So it's books. And I've been reading Advocate Sikakani S.'s book.
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's a very big, but very interesting. I'm glued to that. I'm normally a fast reader, but because of the way he wrote, like really a lawyer.
Yes, sir.
And I'm enjoying it.
In fact, there's a book I got literally on Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a meeting at a cafe in Botswana, and there's a kid. His name is Kitso Speaks.
Okay.
He's an entrepreneur. He does a lot of online stuff and a lot of public speaking. And he came and offered me a book. The book is called Duma Gideon Boko, who's the new president.
The new president of Botswana, yes.
Pioneering the African Renaissance, Edition 1. So basically, from the day Duma Boko's umbrella for democratic change
yes.
won the election,
mm-hmm.
6 days later, this book was published.
Wow.
Yeah. And basically, he talks about the change that's happening on the continent. And some of the parties that are spearheading this change,
yeah.
And some of the things they need to do in order for the change to be sustainable, because a lot looks nice on paper.
I would agree with that. I was saying to somebody the other day, we are seeing a lot of change happening, change
yeah.
in governments, change in political figures,
yeah.
promises. Some are being implemented,
sure.
But the sustainability of it,
yes.
will they hold on to that? If African leaders, you know, like in the Sahel region now, Ghana has joined them, it's 4 now.
Yeah.
If we, it can grow, if we can have a quarter of this continent.
It could be a wildfire,
yes.
but like you're saying, it has to also be sustainable.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, a lot of new governments come in thinking it's pap in place. That it's easy to run a country.
That's why in South Africa, the ANC has been saying, let these ones come.
That it's easy to just turn a massive machine around. Especially when you're coming into a system that already has people who might be party political, who might slow down your efforts
yes,
intentionally.
Yes.
So this book literally addresses issues like that. And what he would like to see President Boko do, basically. So, like I said, I just started it, but it should be an interesting read. So, find him on social media, Kitso Speaks, and order yourself a book. You might enjoy it.
That would be nice. Yeah.
When I'm done with the book, I'm going to give you the book. And let's support young authors.
Young authors, yeah.
While we're talking about new presidents, inauguration in Ghana.
Yes.
One in Mozambique that President Ramaphosa was thought to not be attending, but he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And President Trump this coming Monday,
Monday
will be
yes.
back in the White House.
Yes.
You want to start in Ghana or Mozambique?
Let's start where? Let's start in Ghana.
Yes, sir.
Because Ghana happened first. Which one? Yeah, Ghana happened first. And with all the drama, look, at least there's a new president in Ghana. He sounds to be progressive as well, like all others who have been coming in.
Mm.
But what caught the world by surprise, and I don't think the Western world had wanted that to happen in Ghana. I don't think they had wanted the old president to be out
yes.
with the party, and the new guy comes in who is warming up to Asia and Russia, who has openly, you know, become friends with the other Sahel countries that are anti the West. And remember what had happened as well was that the people of Ghana started criticizing the election, or journalists in Ghana started criticizing the process of the elections because the West wanted the old man to come back. But what shocked him is to be bold with the relationship with Captain Ibrahim Traoré. And for him to show up at the inauguration ceremony in Ghana. You know, Fresh, I follow the politics there a lot, man. Captain Ibrahim, and people are asking, why do I address him as captain? The nice thing about these leaders from Burkina Faso and having had Captain Thomas Sankara before is because they come in coups, they keep the military titles. They don't become generals or anything. They keep the titles where they were, as low as a captain. And the Western media is refusing to address Ibrahim Traoré as the president or the leader. They'll call him a junta, and all those things, while the people of Burkina Faso have embraced him. You know, throughout the invitation to the inauguration ceremony, he had kept on saying he is not going to attend for his own security and all those things. And he showed up, you know, with his side.
I was going to say, he was packing. Like, who shows up at an inauguration packing heat?
No, but let me tell you, I would do that if I know. There's been 19 assassination attempts on his life in the last 3 years.
Imagine.
19.
Yeah.
And he's a military man. The decision is, I'll go down fighting.
Sure.
But this is not new. Those who know history, Thomas Sankara went to address the United Nations with his pistol.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is actually a replica of what Sankara was.
Sure.
Thomas Sankara went to meet the French to tell him he's taking over, and he had his pistol on. He preferred his own cars, his own defense, his own arms.
Sure.
And if my life is in danger, I am not going to go and take chances. But I don't think people were saying it's against protocol and it endangered the president of Ghana. These people are friends. They are comrades in arms. What danger is it there? I don't think he even carried a firearm into another country without the security clearance of that particular country. There must have been an arrangement, an agreement. Yeah. So for me, that Captain Traoré went to an inauguration ceremony dressed in military camouflage. I've never seen him in any other clothes except in his military camo. And I think it was a smooth sailing inauguration there, and change of government in Ghana. Now we've got four countries in the Sahel region which have teamed up together to say enough is enough with exploitation of our mineral resources, and we want to I think it's good for ECOWAS. You know, the East, what do you call it? Not East, is it ECOWAS?
ECOWAS, yes.
Yeah.
It's ECOWAS,
The economic region of West Africa. I think it's a good thing. The more there's unity, the more there's cooperation amongst those countries, it's much better. And the change of government in Ghana may actually save ECOWAS because it was going to collapse.
Yes.
Left main the stronghold is Nigeria now, which is faced with a problem as well, that the CIA has come and said their president was a drug dealer. You know, they've released papers, the president of Nigeria. So Ghana can play a very pivotal role in the region.
They have an opportunity.
They have an opportunity, yeah.
What are your thoughts on Macron the other day talking about how the Burkina Faso and Africans are very ungrateful? They should be saying thank you to Paris for helping quell insurgencies.
What agencies were they created the chaos?
In a nutshell, he says we are ungrateful. And then Traoré is on some, you're insulting all Africans.
No, he's insulting us.
You're insulting us.
Well, I was insulting Africans.
We must be grateful.
Europe. It's what it is because of Africa. Everything, the labor, the minerals, the wealth, and all that. If you go to London, where is the biggest stock reserves of gold in the world? It's sitting in London. Yeah. They have gold mines, zero. France itself, actually, when I saw that, I said, somebody must tell Macron that we will even take out their football squad, which is our children.
And let's, for argument's sake, say he is right that France have been helping in whichever way. When you look at the bigger picture, you are never in a position to say Africans should be grateful for anything.
For colonialism, nothing.
If anything, you should be apologizing all the time.
Yes.
You should be playing reparations all the time.
Exactly, exactly. No, Macron is
for failing. Five generations, he's you should failing. Be paying back.
He's failing to take care of politics in his country. They are in chaos, and he goes and insults Africans that they should...
That's what happens. That's what happens, though, when you sleep with someone old enough to be your mother. You become ungrateful like that. Busted. I'm actually annoyed. It's actually upsetting.
I can see how annoyed you are.
No, the self-righteousness of a lot of these European countries. Imagine if Belgium tomorrow comes and says, yeah, the Central Africans must be grateful
must
to
be
us.
Must be grateful to Leopold.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine but the audacity if that was to happen?
That's what, you know, Europeans are. That's what racists and colonizers think when they think they developed Africa when they actually underdeveloped and exploited the continent.
It's like when Mama Helen Zille was talking about how colonialism also had its benefits.
It does, you are never
ever allowed to even imply that.
What?
Given how much damage was caused in that process. To tell me that we must be grateful that you built us roads and this and that, but at what cost?
But who built the roads?
And at what cost?
I said when I grew up, I've never seen a white person on top of a scaffolding building a bridge or a house. Who built those roads? At whose labor? And as you say, at what cost?
How many families are still looking for the loved ones to this day?
Exactly.
How many families don't know where grandpa is?
We have youth that left the country in 76 because of apartheid. Some they never came back. Some we never recovered the bodies. And these people come and they want to tell us that Europe was developed Africa. What development is in Africa? As if they found us undeveloped.
No, it's so upsetting.
Anyway.
And like the other day, I posted a video clip of an interview I did with Dr. Kani.
John
Kani.
Yes.
And basically, I shared a story with him about a police officer that stopped me and my dad
in Mariko,
yes, in the old Buputazwana.
Yes.
And, you know, this cop called my dad a boy. And just how he emasculated my dad in front of me. And that I've never forgotten that. And Dr. Kani told the story of how, when he was a kid, the dad made it clear to all the children that you are to never ever come to my workplace, even if the house is burning.
Yeah.
And because, he said, one of the
black, you're not allowed.
No, not even you're not allowed. He said the reasoning was his dad never wanted to see him being treated like a boy at work.
Oh, okay. The humiliation.
That at work you are emasculated to such a level that you don't want your kids to see that. Because to your kids, you are Baba.
You
are the leader, you are the patriarch. And that at those firms where a lot of black men were emasculated and treated like boys, you never want your kids to see you like that. You know what I mean? I'll tell you another story.
Yeah.
So my dad was a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to buy a lot of bulls in Botswana.
Okay.
And we went to a farm between the Botswana border and Zeerust.
Yeah.
And there was a little kid, calling the farm hand a boy. He called the farm hand. I was his age. And I remember that thing hurt me so much. I even asked Papa, what is going, why, you know, we left.
Why should we still buy from this? We were
looking for a Simmental bull. We left because this little kid was calling the farm hand who was old enough to be my father.
Yeah.
A boy.
You know, when you reposted the video last weekend, we are diverting, but I need to mention this.
Yeah.
I've seen that interview you did with Ntate Ekan.
Yes.
I think it was months ago.
It was last year, yes.
Yeah, so when you reposted it, I just bumped on it on your Instagram.
Yes, sir.
I actually commented to say, I could literally see tears in your eyes as you were relating the story. It reminded me, my dad used to work for Munich Reinsurance.
Sure.
The biggest reinsurance company in the world at that time. He once came home after 17 years and they gave him a tie, you know, with the logo of the company, the Mini Gree logo. And my dad resigned. He refused to go to work after. So the award for 17 years of service was a tie. You know, my little sister was 2 years old when my dad resigned from work. He made my sister to recite the whole night, "Tie, Papa," because he kept on saying to us, "These people thank me with a tie. They gave me a tie to say thank, a tie with their logo.
Imagine
and their colors, which the Munich Re company colors were a combination of a German apartheid era colors. He refused to wear it, and he actually said he was going to wake up the following day, wear an overall, and put the tie on that overall, and go and resign. But he never went back to work. And it's so sad that if we can sit with our kids and tell them what our parents went through.
So that post, in fact, has other people telling similar stories. about how their parents were dehumanized. There's a girl who talks about her mom passed away, and then she needed to go tell the bus.
The bus, yeah.
That mom has passed away. And initially, they wouldn't let her into the house. She had to stand outside. And then she saw the plate and the cup that mom used to eat from next to the dog's plates. That's where they kept her plates, that Wachabiki cup and the enamel is Wachabiki and the enamel plate. And like I said, and it's for that reason that you'd think there'd be a bit of humility from former colonizers.
Yeah.
Instead of the arrogance that almost says you must be grateful to us.
That's why when I speak to people, I always say what Pan-Africanism is teaching us is we should not look at the former colonizers and apartheid pushers. There'll be better people after. I don't expect them to be. We should look at us and what can we do our life that we should never be like them. And we should also develop our minds and decolonize our mind to think that they will act and behave humanly after all these years of apartheid and colonization. They will not. It is within them. And we are not insulting them when they say they are behaving inhuman. We are actually telling the way they are.
I'm telling you
themselves.
How you're making me
yes.
feel. I'm telling
and,
you
how
you're making
and how me feel. I feel from your conduct. You just mentioned the example of Helen Zille. Many of them do the same. You know, there's still people who make videos around South Africa and say everything is dilapidated. Yes, there's challenges, there's corruption, and the government is failing on many things. But nobody must come and tell us that apartheid was better, or it was better during apartheid.
Better for who?
Better for them, not for us. And that's where the decolonization of the African mind comes in. We have to decolonize our mind to think that white people will turn around at some stage in life and do and conduct themselves in a manner, and I'm generalizing, you know, in a manner that will benefit us. No. You know what benefits them now is when we are at peace, when we are not fighting or insulting them, and we leave them in their corner with the wealth that they've acquired, then they are happy with that because we are not disturbing their peace and we are not disturbing their wealth.
You're a good Bantu.
Yes, you are a good Bantu. You are non-violent, but that's why imperialists and white capitalists, they will forever fund and love the neoliberalists. They will, because it's a safe haven for them to have neoliberalists amongst them.
You're a good native.
Yes.
You don't cause trouble.
You don't cause trouble. If you start causing trouble, then they will deal with you.
Absolutely. Let's go to Mozambique.
Yes. You know, the Mozambican part, President Chapo was inaugurated on Wednesday. And I'm very disturbed, Fresh. You know, you have elections. It was October last year, if I'm not mistaken. And you have almost everybody except Frelimo, the ruling party, which has been ruling Mozambique for 50 years, they come back into power. SADC, the Southern African Development Community, our regional economic community, sent election observers there. And the report was the elections were not contested freely and fairly, and therefore they cannot be declared to have been free and fair. The International Committee, International Organization, Amnesty International, the Mozambicans themselves, the people of Mozambique are saying the elections were not free and fair. You know, those are the most important people. It's the electorate, it's the inhabitants of that country. But no, President Mnangagwa, who is now the chairperson of SADC, has just taken over from Zambia because they rotate alphabetically. And President Ramaphosa, with South Africa having a critical role they are playing in the region, and pivotal one, if you look at this country is our immediate neighbor, and we are becoming a breadbasket for Mozambique. They go and they endorse a president that the Mozambicans and international election observers have rejected.
Are you saying President Ramaphosa should not have attended the inauguration?
Actually, fairly speaking, I think the South African government led by President Ramaphosa should have critiqued or rejected the outcome that Frelimo should become the party in power. Forget the historical relationships or the liberation movement relationship between Frelimo and the African National Congress. It's okay. It's good when it happens. But it's good for who? Are the people of Mozambique happy with the way Frelimo has conducted itself over the years? No, they are not. But are they happy? And somebody may say, yeah, but they must go to the elections and they must, win power or make Frelimo to lose like the ANC has won in South Africa, and then they move smoothly into a transition of government of national unity. But that does not stop President Ramaphosa to tell the truth.
From calling it out at a certain level.
Especially that a regional body that we belong to, we are a member state of SADC, and a regional body has sent observers. Then the observers have said, when it suited us, when the SADC observer mission wrote the report about South African elections, that they were generally over 90% smooth and fair, we were clapping and to say thank you, our elections have been approved by international observers. But when the same international observer that has been appointed by the regional body says the same is not happening in Mozambique like it happened in Botswana, like it happened in Namibia, we just ignore their report as if, you know, we didn't deploy them there. So I was very actually disappointed. I think it's a slap on the face of the Mozambican people.
But isn't he part of the negotiations anyway? So he needs to be there.
Look, Fresh, then if you go and you inaugurate a disputed president, it's no longer negotiations.
You've stated your position.
You have stated your position. Understand? It means attending an inauguration, it means you are endorsing, you are agreeing with the recount. Remember, they recounted.
Yes.
And
but remember what we said last year. Yeah. That the fact that the High Court said results will be out on Monday,
yes,
and please be calm,
yeah,
was them actually saying exactly what the result will probably be.
Accept whatever is going to come out. And we did say it. But unfortunately, look, what's my view? I don't think there will be stability in Mozambique. I pray that Mozambique must not enter into a civil war that we saw from the early 80s until early 90s, you know, that 10 to 15 year civil war. But I spoke to my sources there before I went for the TRT interview. I spoke to several people there.
Yeah.
And this other guy was saying to me, both and the advantage is Mozambicans are not fighting each other. It's not like Renamo versus Frelimo, like it happened in the past. It's not Mozambique, brother and sister fighting or cousins. It is the people united against the government of Frelimo. And that's why the people, you know, on the inauguration day, eight people were killed that morning. On the day of the inauguration, for the inauguration to continue, the soldiers in Mozambique had to kill eight people. For the inauguration to happen, what does that say to President Mnangagwa and President Ramaphosa, who attended to go and endorse this president Chapo has been rejected?
And but didn't Mondlane also say that he's going to make sure that they shut down the country? So,
yeah. Which they did. The country is still shut down. And the people that I spoke to, they said to me, the country is still shut down from top to bottom. You know, when I say top, I mean from the north to the south, east to the west. The country is dysfunctional. I don't know how long this will this last. I don't know how the government is going to function moving forward. I've heard the opposition parties, there's MDM there and there's RENAMO as well. They said they will take their positions in the opposition benches. Which I think it's a, you know, it's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's a good thing that they are taking their opposition position. But that does not stop the men on the street to continue with the politics. And I don't think the opposition is going to call their members out and say stop this, because they did not reach a negotiated political settlement. They didn't reach a settlement. They recounted and they said we'll go with what we are recounting. But for me, that's not how the IEC should work. The problem is not to say the counting was wrong. That was not the challenge. The challenge was the elections were not free and fair. So you are still recounting the same numbers that were being challenged.
You're putting the old wine in a new bottle.
Exactly. You're taking the old wine and putting it in a new bottle. You know, and that's not the solution. But again, we don't want a civil war in our neighboring state.
Mondlane fled the country
for
safety reasons. But now he's back in the country.
He's back in the country.
Is that a good move?
Well, he had to
come
back.
And what stops Chapo from having him arrested?
I don't think it will be a good political move.
Oh, so you think he deliberately moved back?
He deliberately moved back.
Touch me and let's see.
Let's see where he goes. But I don't think Chapo or Frelimo, they'll be so stupid to can arrest him. I don't think so. And I think they kept him out of the country, or here and there when they were hippies out, so that he couldn't mobilize easily when he's in the country. You understand? It's difficult to can mobilize people by remote control, unlike when you are in the country.
You can do it with one tweet.
Trump
did it with one tweet.
Yeah, but then you go to Mozambique where the government shuts down everything. They shut down the internet and people can have access to tweet and all that. Trump, it's a different story.
Do you think Chapo, for peace reasons, might include some of the opposition in his government?
Look, I listened to the inauguration speech, and I read it, you know, I read the whole speech. It's modest, and it's more towards peace and rebuilding Mozambique. But all presidents say such things during inaugurations. I don't know if the fact that the other parties have said they will take their seats in the opposition, I don't know if he's going to do that. I think it may help for stability.
That's what I'm thinking.
It may help them. And I think in a modern day world, you know, that's what you do. You bring your opposition or your enemies
closer to the house. Olive branch always.
Let's work together to rebuild the country. That will be a very good move to do. But the question is, will the people and members of those political parties or supporters of the independent candidate appreciate the fact that now we have somebody in the cabinet? What does it say? What does it do to us? Does it defeat what we're protesting for? Understand? Almost 1,000 people have been killed in Mozambique since the beginning of this, you know, uprising. And it look fresh. Let's see how it goes in the first week, because he must now announce his cabinet in the coming week. And the olive branch he may extend in terms of diplomatic posts or senior government positions for the opposition. And form, in an inverted commas, something like government of national unity, because it looks like that's where the world is going through now. Understand? I mean, the whole of Europe had GNUs, France, Germany, and what is happening after a year or two of government? They are collapsing.
Yeah.
All governments are collapsing. It's only in South Africa where it looks like it's holding on. It's been 7 months. It's also too early for us to say it's holding on. But let's hope Chapo will divorce a little bit being a hardline person of Frelimo, like his predecessors, and say, what can we do for the bettering of the lives of the Mozambican people?
Absolutely. Monday, President Donald Trump goes back into the White House. What are your thoughts on leading towards the 20th?
Look, we expect that we have already congratulated President Trump, but I saw his statement of sometimes during the week. He issued a statement that the America will be better with him, and one of the things he has mentioned is the, you know, calling off of the war in Israel, and it said it's his own efforts and his envoy to the Middle East. But I don't think there'll be much changes in the USA that will impact on the world. I always say the Republicans and the Democrats are two sides of one coin. It's America and America and America first. I know President Trump has been threatening BRICS member states, BRICS supporters, but what he has done for the Americans, the first thing he did before he was even in office, you know, those soldiers that were dismissed from service for refusing to take COVID vaccines, he said they must all come back to work with back pay. That's one of the first things he's going to be doing. Monday after inauguration, they'll be back into their service with back pay.
Sure.
I think that's a bold move for him. But the second part also is, he's a convicted felon now, remember? Yeah, he was convicted about a week ago. So unfortunately, he will not serve a term in jail.
Absolutely.
But he's a convicted.
But can he be revisited after 4 years, though?
Look, it could be. I don't know the judicial system of the U.S. very well, but I think it could be. If I was him, actually, I would go through an appeal. I don't know what are the chances of appealing at the moment. You don't want to sit. They're going to hammer him throughout the 4 year term to say, don't forget, when you're a criminal.
But also, it's not like he cares. Like, he's back in the White House, and he can do to his heart's job, desire. He can make sure that, you know, the ground is ripe for his business dealings, that relations with other countries where he might want to set up a golf course,
or build hotels.
He's a businessman through and through. And the fact that he's surrounding himself with his thinker-likes,
his ilk,
and people who are almost as radical as he is. I think he's gonna fly for these 4 years.
He is.
And whether we like it or not, his looking out for America is probably gonna do wonders for the dollar.
Yeah,
and that's what he wants. I mean, he's an American president, so all he cares about is America.
And the business.
Everything else will be incidental.
And fresh, that's how it should be. That's how a head of state, a leader of a country, should be thinking. Your country first, the rest shall follow. But there's also challenges there that has been erupting, especially since after Christmas, you know, towards this inauguration that will be happening on Monday the 20th. There are what you call gaps, you know, that are coming out in the Republican Party. You know, those right wingers who are far right extremists.
Yes.
And they've been criticizing President-elect Trump for choosing or appointing people who are not white racist people in their, you know, inverted commas words.
Or are not nationalists.
Are not nationalists. There some are, you know, immigrants that came to America, like the head of the FBI, Elon Musk himself is a South African who has been naturalized in the USA. And they say, but we are not happy with these people that we have put you back into the White House. And you go and you appoint nationalists or moderates and who are business people that we don't like. So there's a that is widening within the Republicans, and every day there are reports coming out of the USA that these people are not happy with the conduct of Trump. But he doesn't care. He's not even responding to them. And these people are heavyweight Jews with monies within the Republicans, who are very influential senators of the Republican Party. And they say they will actually even collapse the government inside, because luckily America is a federal state. So a governor of one of the states may decide he's not going to toe Trump's line, and life will continue as normal. But I think Elon Musk as well, he's overstepping now, because he has started talking about interference.
I think he's so emboldened that all of a sudden it's almost like Hasana, stop.
Yeah,
no brakes, no hand. The brakes and the handbrake are broken.
Are broken, yeah.
And now you want to even talk about a regime change in the UK.
In the UK, exactly. And I was like, this guy, he's supposed to be a scientist, IT businessman.
Yeah.
Now he wants to be a typical American. Typically, he's no longer South African. Typical American. He wants to get an involved in politics of the world, because that's what Americans will do. They they've been for years deciding who goes into which position, where, in which country. I think it's overstepping. He's now getting into much more bigger shoes to try and influence politics in the UK. It's a different ball game in the UK. They've got a monarchy there, and it's an old, you know, traditionalist kind of government, even if they've got modern day parties like the Green Party and all that. But I don't know why would Elon Musk be interested in the UK politics when he has just been roped in by President Trump to be a key figure in American politics. But yeah, he must actually come home and come and sort out the mess we are sitting with in South Africa. Charity begins at home. Elon Musk should have sorted out. And it's all about money, Fresh.
Yeah.
You were talking about how Trump won the election by making one tweet or sending one statement out, facilitated by Elon Musk, you understand? So it's all about the one who has the money, understand, calls the shots and decides where things should flow. Politics is about money. You must just have a lot of money and master how to lie or to mislead people. Then you become a very good politician.
Absolutely. Speaking of politics, I mean, that's why we're here. 113 years of the ANC.
What an odd number.
The January 8th statement has come and gone. The train choo-chooed into the Western Cape. What are your thoughts on the goings-on of that week?
Look, Fresh, there's not much to take about this. The reports that came out is that the ANC administration failed to book bigger statements and stadiums for the event.
Well, that's according to the DA. But they're saying, no, we are intentionally taking January 8th to the people and to our stronghold.
Yes, yes. But I wouldn't say it's according to the DA, because what I've read, it was according to the City of Cape Town Municipality. Yes, it's run by the DA.
According to the mayor, basically.
Yes, according to the mayor.
Because the mayor is implying that the stadiums they wanted have been pre-booked.
Pre-booked,
and they expected us to pull strings for them.
Exactly.
But we're not willing to pull strings for them.
Again, the City of Cape Town did what we opened up with. If you are a public administrator, you stick to the rules.
Yeah.
Somebody came on time, booked the stadium, whether it was for rugby or cricket or what, they followed process. So when the ANC was sleeping and they wanted to go to better stadiums and they come late, although the ANC played a very nice
They spun it nicely
when they said, no, we actually want to be in Gooks, you know,
we're going to go to our people. Yeah.
And also with the numbers, people are no longer interested in attending parties and rallies, you know, and all that. And except those who like Monate, like people traveled from Limpopo right to the Western Cape for that. Look, rhetoric statements. You know, when I listen to President Ramaphosa, it's things we have heard before. The renewal of the ANC. And then there was some things that happened in the media that the Secretary General Fikile Mbalula used not the ferry, but the yacht to go to Robben Island.
A speedboat stroke luxury yacht.
Luxury yacht.
When everyone else took the fare.
The usual fare. Look, I think the media just threw a fanfare on that. He explained why he took that yacht because of his activities. For me, that's not the
issue. He needed to be in and out, basically.
He said to be in and out. And some of the people who were coming with the ferry, they actually even missed the other events that he attended to.
Yeah.
But I could see where the media and the DA was going there.
In terms of what, the optics?
Yes. They were trying to say, look, they are saying they are talking to people of Khayelitsha and Gugulethu and Langa while they are in luxury, they are using yachts and all that. They were trying to paint the picture of how the ANC is aloof or far from the people in reality. But you know, the DA also went to an extent of saying the ANC must stop saying the people of the townships there, they are being neglected. The DA came very quickly to say, no, they are not neglected. They are better off under the DA than it was. So it's politicking over the two political parties. But again, the January 8th of the ANC statement, the presidential statement focusing on the renewal of the ANC, and then there's still infighting going on. There's still stories that Panyaza Lusufi, the premier of Gauteng, snapped. He was the only premier who was not there when the president was addressing on the actual day, the 8th, not the celebration part. And look, there's still challenges in the ANC afresh. And the challenges are being worsened by their in inverted commas former member, future member, President Zuma as well. You know what he did? On the 8th of January, the actual birth date of the ANC, he served them with court papers. A letter, you know, a legal letter to Fikile Mbalula to say, again, look at what President Zuma is doing. He's serving them with this legal letter on the day of the celebration of the birthday. So he's just messing up with them. But I can tell you why President Zuma did that now. A week before that, or even 2 weeks before that, the South African Communist Party, and people don't see what is Zuma trying to do with this. The South African Communist Party stood up and announced that they are going to contest the ANC come local government elections in 2026.
Because they're not happy with them being in bed with the DA.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, and not only, and also the ANC has failed to deliver, you know, for the masses. They are a communist socialist. Now, look at it technically. You are saying, Zuma, you can't contest us. You can't de-campaign the ANC and campaign from controversies and run elections while you are still our member. South African Communist Party leaders, they're having dual membership of the ANC. Some are serving in the cabinet. They are former SG, Dr. Blade Nzimande, the deputy of
But we are allies.
Yes.
And our allyship allows for that.
It allows for what?
For dual membership.
Aha. Now,
because we are allies.
It's fine.
But
it's
if you are not an ally, you can't expect to be a member of the ANC and start your own party.
Okay.
Unless unless the party you're starting, we agreed we're going to be allies.
Okay.
We can't say because you and the Communist Party are in bed together, therefore you can take a second wife.
Okay. What is the purpose of a membership if what I'm going to do, and I carefully use the word, the South African Communist Party is going to de-campaign the ANC if I'm going to contest.
But are you de-campaigning?
I'm challenging you.
You're challenging me, but we are still allies.
Fresh, what is the purpose of elections? Is to bring a party or a political party or a person into power.
So are you saying that based on the Communist Party saying we're going to now run our own campaign?
Yes.
That is no different to the MK
it's
party.
It's not different to other political
and
parties.
And therefore the relationship must end.
The relationship must end. That's what I'm saying.
But President Ramaphosa the other day was speaking about how we are joint at the hip. You need us, we need you.
Okay, so
who needs who the most, though,
look,
of the two?
The failures of the ANC may benefit the Communist Party.
But do you think they will, though? And do you think your average South African would vote Communist Party?
The average ANC person who's upset with the current arrangement, the DA and administration, who doesn't want to go to the MK,
But they're more likely to vote MK or EFF before the Communist Party.
Now, those who remain, there are many people in the ANC who are still loyal to the ANC. They're not happy with the arrangement or sleeping arrangement with the DA, but they're still loyal to the ANC. Because of the historical tight and the hip relationship with the Communist Party, they will say, we'll rather go with the Communist Party. We are not changing anything. We have always been with them. Unlike these new kids on the block.
Mm.
There are people who are not happy in the ANC with the GNU. They're just sitting there to say, I'm not going to MK. Mm. I refuse to go to COPE and EFF before. But I would rather go with the Communist. My point of argument is one. The South African Communist Party has pronounced that they are going to contest the elections, and ANC is the ruling party in South Africa, or the leading at the moment. And if they contest, they will chow from the ANC. So is the ANC saying it's okay that the communist can chow from our bucket, except nobody else but the communist? They can allow. Is that what they are saying? Is that the language there? I don't say they must take Zuma back. He's playing with them. I think it's just frustrating them and exposing them and, you know, wasting time.
Is he frustrating them or is he...
He's keeping them busy.
Does he hope he's going to frustrate them?
He's keeping them busy. He's a nuisance. He's a... When you have a fly, when you eat mohodu, you know...
Being a strife for the sake of it.
Yeah, for the sake of it, you know, because they get excited.
Mm.
You know, you saw how...
But do they get excited or does the media get excited? Because I think there's a big difference.
When I listened to Fikile Mbalula talking how Zuma is a liar in response to that.
But because the media asked, had the media ignored it, I think the ANC would have ignored it.
But Fresh, why would the media? We are the media. We are talking about it now. Why should the media ignore?
But that's the point I'm making, happenings? Though. That I think Babu Zuma has the media here.
Yeah, he's been to the gallery.
So he knows that if I do this, they're going to do that.
Yes, yes.
But in the bigger scheme of things, does it really affect the ANC to the core?
It does.
Or have they moved on?
They haven't moved on. It does. Look, they've dismissed Zuma and in their books he's dismissed. But the fact that, you know, it's like when you have divorced a person, let me use a simple example.
Yeah.
And you have kids. And now and then the person goes back to court to ask for alimony increment, you know, and that you are misbehaving just to irritate you and to waste your time.
Yes.
You understand? And it keeps them busy. When Fikile Mbalula was in front of the media, he could have talked about the developments in the ANC, their programs and things like that. Most of his time was taken about answering Zuma.
Mm.
And for me, you understand, he's taking the airtime from the media that they should be using to sell the new renewed ANC.
Mm.
Instead of them being in the media talking about the renewed ANC, how they are going to work for, how they are going to handle Zili and the DA and the challenges in front of them, they are instead using the media platform, because the media is also to communicate to your members.
Sure.
And those who may be swayed, you understand?
Mm.
Now, instead of having that opportunity to do those things, they are distracted by this fly that keeps on popping in.
Mm.
And for me, it may not have much of a benefit.
Sure.
But we know how South Africans are influenced by the media a lot.
Mm.
You know, even in things that are insignificant.
We love drama. We love drama.
We love drama, 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 drama. And Zuma has kept the country on drama almost every year.
Mm.
Almost every year. And what does it do? It distracts people.
Mm.
And for me, that's the ANC is failing to communicate what is their plan, what is their comeback plan. We will arrive in 2026 while they're still talking Zuma, Zuma, Zuma. You understand? And that's where he wants them.
Can we also discuss maybe and whether or not it's a slippery slope where Bra Tony Yengeni is in his representing Babu Zuma,
yes,
but also he's a member of the ANC.
Yeah.
And I mean, even Mbaki's called him out.
Yes, yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Look, remember he was representing him before Zuma was chucked out, even
at the
on
DC,
the appeal.
Yes.
At the DC, yeah. Even on the appeal.
Mm.
So there was nothing wrong with that, because
sure,
it's like at work, you can take one of your colleagues to represent you.
Mm.
So I don't see anything wrong with that. But
it's not your colleague that has been fired. It's your colleague that has gone to another company to decampaign your company. Should you be allowed to still represent them at the DC?
Everybody should be allowed a fair process, sure, until the conclusion.
Okay.
And I think the ANC thinks this was a fair process. Zuma thinks it was not.
They wanted to leave no stone unturned.
And I think they did it right, because then he would have used the element of they even denied me representation.
Sure.
So
sure,
I think they handled that part well. But I think there's an element of mistrust between the ANC leadership. And Tony Engin is a member of the NEC, by the way.
Absolutely.
He sits in NEC meetings that takes critical decisions. And there's quite a few of them. There's quite a few of them who are aligned to Jacob Zuma.
So then how do the ANC navigate those relationships? Because it can't be easy wondering who is the Trojan horse and who's not.
Yeah.
Who do we trust and who do we not?
Yeah.
What do we discuss now as an NEC, and what do we not discuss?
It's a challenge.
Do we start introducing lie detector tests?
But you are interfering in a space of people's private lives, because it's an organization. It's not like an employment place. You understand? It's very difficult.
But it's got a constitution. So if they decide that we're going to now start introducing
the constitution,
we're going to start introducing lie detector tests.
And then you'll find people who go like they used to say, President Zuma used to do that after he left office.
Yeah.
You know, they say he will come into the meeting nicely dressed, and he will sit right at the back there for throughout the meeting and said, no, wait.
Yeah.
Now, a lie detector test is the things you have said, or if you are going to lie. But if you go then you listen and you say nothing.
Yeah, but did you take what you heard to someone else?
That's
where the lie is detected or not.
Again, it's taking us back to what I said earlier. He's going to keep them busy instead of focusing on the work at hand. You understand? Trust me, there are so many people in the African National Congress, even in the 80-member NEC. I can count up to 15 or 20 people that I know that are very loyal to President Zuma. That I know they move information to Umkhonto or to President Zuma.
The fact that there was clearly someone in the ANC sharing information with a Julius Malema.
Yes.
There's no way.
For all the years.
There's no way there aren't a bunch of people doing the same for JZ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially in the NEC. You understand? So, and the thing also is they don't trust each other.
Yeah.
They're faced with that problem. They don't trust each other. There are NEC members who don't like the GNU, but they're respecting the organization decision.
Yeah.
And they don't like the DA. You understand? And they see their comrades as compromising enough too much towards the DA.
Sure.
They will obviously talk to you. Remember, these people are brothers, they are comrades, they are families. I've got family members in the African National Congress. Where do people think I get sitting in the NEC of the ANC? Where do people think I get minutes of the NEC? It's family and friends that we are having there. I mean, that's the source of information. Unfortunately, it's a public organization. You can't stop the people.
There's a comrade that I was having a conversation with, and I wanted to ask, and it had nothing to do with politics. First thing he said to me, that he doesn't trust WhatsApp. And that I must contact him on Telegram.
Yes.
But
yes,
even on Telegram, he said, but rather we speak face to face.
Yeah. You remember what
Baby? And on top of that, and then he was like, but please leave your phone in the car when you talk. I was like, how paranoid have we become?
No. I've always lived like that when I discuss this. And you remember Pepe Escobar, the guy we met during the Rosophilia? He said to me, stop communicating with WhatsApp. I had to install. What do you call it?
Telegram.
Yeah. That is the safer than I always thought WhatsApp is safe. But you will go into, it's not paranoid trash. There are meetings that I go to. In the past, I will remove the SIM card, separate it from the phone, leave the phone somewhere, or carry the, what they call the Popotani phone.
In fact, that's what a spook friend of mine told me.
Yeah.
A spook friend of mine told me that depending on where you're going, if you don't trust the people, remove the SIM card.
Remove the SIM card.
And even leave the phone.
Leave the instrument.
He even went as far as saying, also, if your phone randomly becomes hot, it might be another sign that
it has been hacked.
Yeah.
But look, the spy intelligence life, you know, you're asking me this thing, I'll say things on that are very scary. During the course of this past week, an old friend from one of the neighboring countries calls me, and he says to me, look, man, I need your skills or your people. I'm like, and I knew who I was talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what has happened now? And he said, look, there's somebody who wants to wipe off his phone remotely. I'm like, hey, bro, I'm no longer there. I don't work. You know, and why do you want to wipe? But my interest, why do you want to wipe this guy's phone? And it was like, hey, because somebody found a conversation between one guy and the wife. And the guy has everything. I'm like, Yeah, that's why you want to wipe. But there's cloud now.
Mm.
People save stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that people make screenshots. Stop corruption, lies, and entering into houses that you are not welcome in order to avoid getting into trouble.
Mm.
But the ANC is in a very serious dilemma.
I don't envy them at all. Because now you don't know who to trust.
But what can they do? They can't abandon the ship.
Mm.
Understand? You know, there's a lot. I was thinking as we were coming out to the studio this morning that President Ramaphosa is going to finish his term in the ANC before the Government of National Unity ends. Understand? The DA itself is going into their, what do you call it, elections or whatever you call it, next year before the union. So there could be a lot of mistrust happening between the political parties and within the political parties. But I can tell you, you may not envy them. It's not nice being in the ANC.
Mm.
At the moment, it's very challenging. And it is not nice. Who's going to say what, when, to who, and all those things. But look, they always say the oldest liberation movement in the continent, they will overcome the 113 years old. They've been through turmoils and challenges. They always refer to the Mokokoro, event and how O.R. Tambo has led them out of these challenges and Mandela and all those things. So they think they will survive this. I'm one of the people who have started writing the obituary of the ANC. The writing is on the wall for me, and not because of liking it or not, but basing it off what I'm observing.
Based on what you're seeing right now.
Yes, the situation is getting worse.
Sure. Yeah. Let's move to the EFF.
Yes.
The other day, Andy Siwe Makinana and Buseni Ndlozi said we are done with Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
What
is that, the name Makinana?
Yeah.
Is it Makinana? I thought it's some. Why did I have a good name? I remember the guy. I didn't know it's Makinana.
No, man. It was. In fact, no. I lie. I think Andiswe Makinana wrote the article. My bad. Yes, yes wrote the article. But Ndlozi stepping down as a member of parliament.
Surprised that he did that move first.
Yeah,
that surprise caught me by surprise. But look, you remember our last episode before the EFF went into their elective conference?
Yes.
Everybody was looking, where is Dr. Ndlozi? What is the position? And I praised him for keeping quiet. Mm. I said in the last episode, he actually exposed Julius and the anger in Julius Malema. But the resignation from Parliament first, that caught me by surprise. I thought he will make his political position clear.
Do you think he jumped or he was pushed from Parliament?
I think the situation was already, what do you call it?
Untenable.
Untenable. Mm. I think that's also not pleasant for a human being because he was being humiliated.
Leave the party once?
Well, we don't know, but maybe let me tell you the fashionable thing that's happening in politics at the EFF. Maybe his membership was due for renewal, so you don't just renew it. Then you stand up and say, no, but I didn't renew my membership. Because if you look, that's what they've been doing.
Yeah.
They don't want to resign. Said, I'm not renewing my membership. You understand? My contract has expired of employment.
Therefore, I'm not employed.
Therefore, I'm not renewing it. So I think the writing's on the wall. Mbuyiseni is going to leave the EFF, if not politics.
In fact, on Tuesday, Juju in an interview said that their relationship has dissolved.
Yeah, it's the word used.
The bond. The bond has dissolved.
And to go to next, then I think he was interviewed by Dr. Tabanaito about that.
Yes.
When he said, I don't have a relationship with Mbuyiseni.
Hmm.
You see, it was Fighter Ndlozi, Comrade Ndlozi. And those who have studied industrial psychology, they will tell you, there's Fighter Ndlozi, Comrade Ndlozi, Dr. Ndlozi.
Now it's Mbuyiseni.
Now it's Mbuyiseni. I don't know where he is. He's not my friend. Since October, I haven't spoken to him. I mean, he was just short of, no matter how Dr. Tabane was trying to suck information from Julius about, but where's the guy? You can't just dismiss as he's just another ordinary member of the. I think he was trying to avoid, to say, I've pushed him out, understand? And again, it's where the ANC is. The EFF is in the same boat. It's an element of trust. But what is killing them is that they had centered everything around one person, Julius Malema. And that's where the problem is. They created debt in the EFF. Julius has a very strong personality, very dominant personality, and they allowed it.
But you were there in the beginning and the formation of the EFF.
Yes.
You were there.
Yes.
Why were there, where was nothing put in place to avoid it being a, I don't know, one man show, as it were.
Those who tried to do that, they end up in the streets within months of the formation of the EFF.
Mm.
And senior people in politics.
But you didn't. But you didn't try to do it. But they're still on the streets.
No, I tried. I told you the story that I wrote to Dalimpof.
Oh yes, you did.
With Dalimpof, who was the chairperson. Yes, I was the first and probably the only person who had official. I didn't go to the media and make noise.
Yes.
I wrote a formal letter to Dalimpof as the chair of the EFF and said Julius is becoming a loose cannon, and here are my facts, and we should charge him. I actually said to charge to Dali, I want us to charge Julius. Understand? And I ended up there, but it was very late. There are the senior people in the organization, Mpora Makata, Dr. Litchfield, I think it's Shabalala, Andile Mkutama, and many, Kenny Kune, and many others who were the founding people of the EFF. They left. They end up on the, because they couldn't take that. So they opted to leave or being pushed out. But there are those who came and who I would call then the rookies of politics, because Mbuyiseni was never a politician.
Yes.
He was always an activist, a young man who was a student activist. They saw it normal that you must respect leadership.
Sure.
When leadership speaks, you must listen, and there's nothing else you can do. And on a serious note, they stayed. They stood 11 years. It's a lot of time for working with a person of Julius's character. There's nothing wrong with Julius, the person, but the character in politics. And you know, when I listen to that interview you are referring to, for example, one of the questions that came up, and this was very disturbing for me. If I was a follower or a supporter of the EFF, I would get worried that my leader talks like that. He was being asked about one of the things that led to them losing election, or a certain percentage on election, is their standpoint or policy on borders in Africa.
Yes.
That I know that part of the policy. I understand it because I have personal interest, my professional work and politics. So I understand it. And Julius responds to JJ Tabani and say, our position is very clear. You know, I'm quoting him. When people have punished us on elections because of our borderless Africa position, it's because they don't understand, and it's their problem when they don't understand. You are a leader. You've got policies. You want first your members to understand your policies, and your followers, and potential.
And to buy into them.
And to buy into that. Now you stand up on a national, international platform and say, those who don't understand this thing is their problem. And that's why, and the EFF is saying it's a Pan-Africanist organization. But if you remember what Sobukwe was saying when the ANC adopted the Freedom Charter, Sobukwe kept on saying, never underestimate the intelligence of the African people. Keep on knocking on their doors. It took over 300 years of colonialism and apartheid to instill wrong things in the minds of our people. We cannot over time just dismiss them as nothing and people who don't understand. It's our duty, those who claim to understand, to can keep on knocking on people's doors and make the people to understand. It took Jacob Zuma how many ANC presidents and how many people that Jacob Zuma followed, from Oral Tambo to Mandela and communist, for Jacob Zuma to stand up in 2023, 16th of December, and pronounce on Pan-Africanism. So when they left the ANC Youth League, and they were divided with them, and they formed the PAC, the Zumas were junior to them at that time. Understand? Only in 2024, Jacob Zuma stands up and say, Sobukwe was right, we need Pan-Africanism. Now, if it can take an intellectual or a smart person like Jacob Zuma over 60 years, you know, to say Sobukwe was right, why would Julius be impatient with the people understanding? And some of the supporters, or majority actually of South Africans, especially from rural areas, are illiterate people. And we are sitting here, we are quoting the Fanons and the Du Bois and the Marxists and the what. It's for us to make people to understand. When the EFF had said borderless Africa, it did not mean the physical borders must be removed and people must move as they want. So it's the duty of the a political commissars in the EFF. And that's what the SNI, when we were there, we had that duty.
Mm.
You understand? To go and teach the people what do you mean.
Break it down. Break it down.
Bring it to
the layman.
Yes, for a lay person.
At a practical level, what exactly does it mean?
What exactly are we saying that we want a borderless Africa?
Mm.
And they failed to grasp that opportunity. But that's where you see who is a leader, who's a dictator, who doesn't care. Julius doesn't care sometimes when he speaks some of these things. And it hurts and offends people.
Sure.
So it will take the strong ones to stay, you know, and remain and say, we'll carry this wagon and we'll move forward with it.
Mm.
But your supporters and your voters on the ground, if you are chasing numbers like they've been chasing numbers all the years, you have to appeal to those people.
So
I also think, and I'm one of the people who have been saying, should I become a politician, I'll stay as much as possible away from the microphone and the cameras. Let those who are experts, you know, both fresh, who talks nice on the radio and can speak. I heard somebody this week praising you that you ask, I don't know what program was I watching, it's like Fresh is asking good and beautiful questions. You understand? I can't remember what was I watching, which one of your interviews and episodes.
I think it was the Bra John Kani one.
It was also that, yes.
Yeah.
And somebody commented that the way you put questions. Now, this is an expert.
Mm.
Allow these people to can do these things and prepare you. You can still talk to the media as a leader.
But be measured.
Yes, but be measured and know where to stop. For example, we have President Ramaphosa. He's one of the worst speakers you can ever come across. But he's got one of the best spokesperson in Vincent Magwenya. No matter how wrong they are or they are misleading us or releasing
statements. Vincent will handle it.
Vincent handles that very well. And that's what they should be doing.
And you know, that's why I think we're in for an interesting 4 years. When you look at how Trump and Elon Musk are almost gonna run that country on Twitter.
On Twitter, yes.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, no, they are. They've already started the tweets this morning saying, when I walk into the White House on Monday, it's...
And how the diehard Republicans are now taking their campaigns to Twitter.
Yes.
And I'm like, is this how countries are run now?
It's
a whole bunch of tours. It's a whole bunch of wars on Twitter.
On Twitter, yes. Political parties are fighting on Twitter. Look at the ANC itself, how they were fighting on Twitter. You know, this one, Mayile says this one about Mbalula. Even if they don't mention names, but people can be. Then the nation gets involved. And commentators and international people who are sitting outside, they're like...
Then it becomes a circus.
Yeah, it becomes
looks like a circus.
Understand? So the old school way, and again, we must appreciate the modern day politics and the reality in the world. The old school way of calling a branch meeting, then the regional meeting and wait for the NEC.
That's gone.
That's gone. By the time that the Ramaphosa go to the NEC to call Mbalula to order, the Panyazas and the others on there would have long dealt with
this. There's 10,000 tweets.
Yes, the 10,000 tweets. The damage is done. We have moved on. We are on another topic now. We are on another thing. And political leaders must also, you know, Kokasi, they say, they must move with the times. I don't say they must run organization on social media, but accept that the social media has impact on people's lives.
Absolutely. In fact, there's talk, and I saw it on social media, of how the ANC in the Free State trying to obviously rejig leadership, some sort of leadership renewal, and that they might have whispered it in Ndlozi's ear to come here.
Before you leave Ndlozi, and then what are they saying?
But that's what I'm saying, that there's this talk that they have made they've reached out to him, basically.
To him, in the Free
State. To be a part of the leadership in the Free State.
In the Free State.
Yeah.
I don't know how will he do that, because ANC is an established organization. They've already, unless they're going into regional elections, which is not time for them to have elections, they can co-opt, because it's not like MK. MK is in a building phase. They can co-opt. The EFF can't even co-opt into leadership. They can bring people and they give them positions like in parliament.
Yes.
I do not know if, one, it will be a wise move for Ndlozi to move to the ANC. He understands. I don't think he will. Let me tell you what I think. And I thought you were asking this because you saw what I put on our group, Lemajita.
Oh, and there's also talk that he might be getting an ambassadorship.
Yes. I think that's more that's going to happen. And from a very reliable source that spoke to me not this past Thursday, the other Thursday.
So Ambassador Ndlozi could be...
We could have Consul General Ambassador Ndlozi very soon.
Oh, wow.
That's what I have learned.
Mm.
And it comes from the top office.
Sure.
What I have learned is that actually Cyril had unleashed people to say, can you go and get that boy into the ANC or in my office, in my team? He wants him. And I was hearing
he's a great mind.
Yeah, he's a very great mind. And he may be an advisor, a researcher, or speech writer, or whatever. And he said, bring him in. Whether in the ANC or in government, that's the part. I think it's more in government than in the ANC. I think the olive branch we spoke about earlier on, don't give Dr. Mbuyiseni Ndlozi a membership of a political party. I'm telling you, the pillow talk with Mabato.
Bring his strengths
where he will perform.
Yeah.
I think he will perform better as a diplomat. Then the second person, independent from the one who told me, is a very senior ANC person, say, hey, the president wants that boy. They actually called me to ask if I've got a direct line to him or his number and all the private line. I'm like, I don't get involved in political situations of people. If I want those, I'll recruit him to my political party, not help the ANC have him. The second person who spoke to me the beginning of this week was a person who has reconfirmed that actually Minister Lamola has been tasked and has even approached the president to say, let's put him in the diplomatic circles. But you remember I told how it works in the diplomatic circle. When they realize that you're an asset they can use for the benefit of one, the country, and the political party, they will deploy you as that. It's common cause. It happens a lot. We just had Tony Leon coming back from Argentina.
Yes, sir.
It does happen. And I think, Ndlozi will do well in the diplomatic corps? I think he will do well. Even if they start him with a junior position as the consul general in a trade mission, don't make him an ambassador in a big country like the Big Five or Big Seven now. In a trade mission or a diplomat as a deputy ambassador or what, in a country where he can grow into the diplomatic, he will do very well there. And I think selfishly for the benefit of the country, I wish somebody can whisper to Ndlozi that if they're offering him a diplomatic post, he should take that. And it's time to post people now in February anyway.
Absolutely.
And I believe more that story than
the Free State
one. I don't think he will reduce himself to those local politics.
Sure.
And people I see, they've written him moving to MK off. I don't know if Floyd and who's there, and Dali, they failed to convince him. But remember what I said. I said, if I was him, I wouldn't do that quick move to join a political party, especially when there were speculations.
I actually respect his silence.
His silence was...
That he's... You can't quote... People can't quote you on your silence.
Yes. They can. They can speculate. No, Ndlozi must actually, one of the days, teach me when to keep quiet about what.
I can teach you. Keep quiet most of the time.
You know what? That's suicide. I've been quiet the last 3 weeks.
In fact, I'd like to start a new system. We must give you the units of when to speak. When they finish,
I must keep quiet.
We don't renew them until we're ready for you to speak again.
I don't know if Trevor will buy into that. I don't know if Trevor. No, but he has done very well by keeping quiet. It is when they say silence is golden, sometimes Ndlozi is an epitome of that process. He has demonstrated to us. But also, Fresh, you know, the way you compose yourself, you have been, you know, called names from all sides, speculations about you, and then you are just quiet, calm about it. He is nowhere to, he doesn't tweet, he doesn't post. He posts and he congratulates the EFF and the leadership.
Yeah.
And he leaves it there.
Do you know why I'm asking you if he was pushed or he jumped from parliament? Because surely if it was him just saying, I'm not going to be in parliament anymore, he would have been alone. But if it's more than one person surely it was a decision from up
and
here.
And they do it at the same time.
Surely it was a decision from up here then.
Yeah, I think they were told to leave. Look, Mbuyiseni was going to leave the EFF. But I think they were told to leave. And Julius, with his sources, he probably also, he heard that he's being wanted for these positions and all that. And he probably had said to them or to the SG, tell these people not to waste our time. Let's respect each other. Let them leave. Now when it's early, it's January, so that we can replace them with people who are willing to take our work as the one of the opposition parties, you know, forward. I think that's what happened. And I think it's an honorable thing also for him to say, you know, I'm not wanted. I'm being told to leave. Let me leave.
Sure.
You know, but yeah, he must stop keeping us hanging. We can't be relying on...
Like, give us something.
Something.
Throw us a bone, yana.
Where you are going, what's going to happen, and all those things. You understand? So... It's, but again, Fresh, I hear people saying Losi can be an academic, he can go and lecture. I think that will be waste. I don't say there's nothing wrong with academics and people who are lecturers and whatnot, or researchers. I think having have seen him in action in parliament, debate, yes, he liked jokes and all that, but debating issues, the way he debated, the way he constructed the acts of parliament and the laws and talking about them, I think it will be a loss when we lose him completely in politics. He can remain in politics without being a politician.
Sure.
And one of them is this diplomatic post, or be an advisor to one of the ministers. You understand? Let them take him to be one of the advisor or policy developer for one of, you know, government policies. He's a kind of a person who will do well there.
But that's why, for instance, losing him in parliament is losing someone who was perfect for oversight reasons purposes.
Yes.
We need a mind like his in parliament for oversight purposes.
And I always tell people, if your political party is the opposition, you should not be able to, how do I put it? You should not think it's useless because they didn't win elections.
Yes.
It is important to have the opposition.
Yes.
Because without, for example, without the EFF, South African political awareness would have not happened until the EFF came into parliament.
They woke a lot of people up.
They woke a lot of people up. People started understanding that the opposition party is very important. It's playing a very key, important role in politics because they are keeping those in power watched and on their toes.
Sure.
So what controversy is in parliament, it's very important, even if they didn't win the elections, because it's going to keep the GNU watched. You understand? They can stand up today and say, we and EFF and ATM are not, we are in the opposition benches, and you, Bosa, and all other parties that went into the GNU, like Patriotic Alliance and IFP and the PAC, you said you will do this. This was what you promised people during elections, and you are not doing it. So that becomes an ace to go back to the electorate when there's elections to say, look at how your votes were wasted. And the opposition party is very important. And people like Mwiseni Ndlozi from the opposition benches, they played a very important role. We are only talking about Ndlozi now, not to say him alone, but the EFF as a whole. They played a very, he's just one of the great minds that has been in parliament. You know, like I said, he used to joke a lot and, you know, Agwaraba to calling people the gingers and sleepists in parliament. But again, I said to people, I don't know whether I was talking to you to say, no, I wanted to say it on this episode, where people think Ndlozi does not have a following. They're making a big mistake. Somebody said to me, do I think Ndlozi has more following, Floyd has, or Ndlozi has more following the EFF? You know why I would say Ndlozi has more following than Floyd? The EFF is youth-based. And the biggest numbers of EFF members comes from the Student Command Council.
Sure.
Ndlozi comes from those academic student activities. A lot of students at universities. EFF is the leading. Over 80% of student SRCs in our tertiary institutions, they belong to the EFF in the country, the whole country. And those youth, they are looking, or students at Ndlozi as the leader.
Sure.
So those are some of the people he may move with, even if they don't follow him to a political party. But people looked upon him as a leader of student activism.
Yes, sir.
And for that, he's got numbers. So they shouldn't underestimate him, thinking he was just an intellectual with a doctorate. He does not have people who look upon him. The Student Command Council of the EFF, the majority of them, they looked upon people like Mwiseni Ndlozi as the leaders.
Absolutely. B, we are out of time.
Okay.
We are really out of time.
They're chasing us out now.
As always, great catching up.
Thanks, my brother.
Great,
thanks,
getting your insights, your thoughts.
Yeah.
And views on what's happening politically around the world. So shout out for that.
Oh, thank you very much. And thanks for your provoking thoughts and topics and suggestions, including Trevor and Keletso from, you know, home. They will pump a lot of topics that we must Absolutely. Cover. But, you know, as I've said to most of our followers, we cannot cover everything at all times. We've got time sure. limits. And also, you know, my brain, I'm aging. I saw some white hairs, so I can take up to a certain point. But yeah, I'm happy we are back.
Where do we find you online?
Botsangm@gmail.com, and on WhatsApp it's +27824859100, and social media handles @botsangm.
And we are done for this week. Hashtag Politrics on Wow, What a Week with Fresh and Botsang. We are coming to you from Rockets TV in Bryanston. If you're looking for a studio to record your podcast, your DJ set, this is the perfect place to do so. Wow, What a Week is part of the Africa Podcast Network. You can email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography, and to Otis the Flo Fraser for all of our imaging. Keletso Modisa Keng is our executive producer, and you are a part of the family. So thank you for liking, for sharing, and for subscribing. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.